Hello, and thanks for joining the Walt Weekly Podcast. It's Friday Night Live. My name is Walter Latham, Sr., and I'm joined by Michelle Sweeney McCombs. And we want to thank y'all guys for joining and supporting our show. Today's show is going to be a great one. It's going to be a great one because we're going to have one of our politicians in the House, whom Michelle will be introducing momentarily. And we want to talk about what we are seeing and some issues that we have front and center in the Bronx. We want to speak a little bit about our new mayor, Eric Adams, and how this guest perceives some of the things he's been doing initially. So we're going to start the show with right now, actually. I'm going to turn it over to Michelle, who's going to introduce our guest for tonight, and we really thank her and we're honored by her presence. And Michelle?
Hey, Walton, thank you. Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the Walt Weekly Friday Live. Thank you to our live audience members, as always, for joining us every week for our Friday Live. Please follow the Walt Weekly and share this podcast by clicking the share button below. The Walt Weekly Friday Live is brought to you by Michelle Sweeney Hair and Skincare. Our intro and outro music is provided by Uncle Nephew. You can find his music on all streaming platforms. Now I'm going to introduce and welcome our weekly panel members. Christopher Sweeney, out of New Jersey, retired New York sanitation worker and CEO of Johnny Roof's Smokehouse. Our next panel member, Honorable Gene Edwards, male district leader, out of the 79th District, Bronx, New York. Thank you, panel members, for joining us. Today's guest, Ms. Althea Stevens, is a New York City Council member, District 16, out of the Bronx, New York. Ms. Stevens is a proud New York native and a respected community advocate. As a dedicated single mother, she works hard to create a sustainable future for her child and for all children and families who live in under-resourced neighborhoods. Welcome, Ms. Stevens, to the Walt Weekly Friday Night Live show. Thank you for joining us.
No, thank you for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
And congratulations.
Thank you so much.
Council member, we appreciate you. Thank you so much. Walter, you can take over.
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Althea, council person representing the 16th District out of the Bronx. Okay. All right. So what I would like to start with, Althea, is first we want to just extend, on behalf of the Walt Weekly Podcast, we want to extend our sympathies to those impacted by the Twin Parks Northwest high-rise fire. It was a tragedy. A lot of people died, kids that were trapped in the building. You know, I know that we used to live in a building, a high rise like that. So I can imagine, you know, what they went through. It's just a tragic situation. So we like to extend our condolences to the Bronx and especially to those directly impacted by that fire. Okay.
Absolutely.
Another thing I want to mention, or just bring up is, you know, what steps? Now, let's get into the nitty-gritty. We're going to go granular on the fire. What steps are being taken to prevent a reoccurrence of something like this? You know, what are you seeing from your purview?
Well, thank you guys for having me. I really appreciate it. I'm excited to be in here and you guys allowing me time to be on here and talk with you and share space. But for a very long time now, folks in the Bronx have been really pushing forward and trying to bring more resources to the Bronx. And this is a very unfortunate tragedy where we lost 17 lives of people of color in an under-resourced neighborhood. But, you know, elected officials and community activists have been, you know, really screaming at the top of our lungs that we need support. And unfortunately, this has had to happen. But we have been, you know, for the last couple of years, making sure that, you know, what does it look like to get new infrastructure into the community? What does it look like to have new development and all these things? And the beautiful thing about this moment right now is if folks see that the community has really come together and the Bronx has really come together. And that's something that always happens, right? The Bronx has been strong and working together for years, but people come together in a very different way of like, how do we help folks? What does this look like? And everyone is like, at every level of government, how do we prevent this from happening, right? So we have Richie Torres announcing. Richie Torres, the Congress member of District 15, which is encompasses that area in my district. He's already come out and said he's going to be proposing a fire safety task force at the federal level, right? So we've also had the state person, Yadelka Tapia, assembly member, say that she's also going to be doing a task force at the state level. And then we had Oswald Felice, the city council member for that area, say he's going to do it at the city level. So it's one of those things where I think that, you know, we should really celebrate how not only the community coming together, but elected officials coming together and working together and being on one accord and really moving forward to ensure that this never happens to any more families.
Were they able to identify, besides the close, is it just a closed door issue where the door didn't close and then you had space heaters being used? Are they, is this just, that's an ongoing investigation? There have been no conclusions yet to exactly.
Yeah, I think it's an ongoing investigation. I definitely don't want to speculate about any of the things that happened, but I do know, like, from what has been released, the fire department said that the door will open. And so we know one of the things that prevents fire from spreading is closing the door, right? But if you think about it, and it's one of the things I was talking about with another colleague the other day, I remember when I was in school, we would have like fire safety training and they would come to schools. And, you know, that's where you heard stop, drop, and roll. And those type of things were like reiterated. That's not necessarily happen in the same way anymore, right? So I think this also puts us in a place where we need to do education better about fire prevention. What does that really look like? And how are we making sure that message is going out to the community and they know what the steps they should take? So like I said, I don't want to make speculations, but that was one of the things that said that the fire broke out, and when they left, they didn't close the door behind them. And I'm sure there was a number of other reasons, but I'm sure it will come out in the next couple of days.
Okay. Because I do want to just go back to, I saw Richie Torres on Bronx 12 today, and he was mentioning that he was introducing this legislation, which includes a ban on space heaters and the doors, ensuring that the doors close. But he did mention that the people that want to be relocated, that have to be relocated, and the ones that want to be relocated because they don't want to return to a scene of a tragedy that they got bad, you know, bad experiences from.
Absolutely. I mean, people lost their lives in that building. And I can't imagine of like the post-traumatic stress that they're going to have and, you know, the trauma that they've seen. And to say that I have to go back there and live there, that can be traumatic in itself. So I know Richie Torres has been working hard. Our Madam Beat Borough President, she's been working endlessly to make sure that these families are relocated and they have homes. So I do want to just make sure that we give them we thank them for their tireless hard work, because they've been on the scene since it's happened, day in and day out, making sure that these families are being taken care of.
Okay. But, another thing. Now, what's being done to help this place? How y'all guys going to fund that? Where's that money going to come from? And you got Section 8. With Section 8 people primarily, when I say people, I'm not doing it in a, you know, derogatory mark, just just a term. You got Section 8 people, and then you got a shortage of apartments in New York City. All right. And so that, I think the term is tenant. But correct me if I'm wrong. You got Section 8, and you got tenants, some type of program that would assist tenants with the cost of rent. I mean, how is that going to be funded? Or is that just something
Are you talking about these set of folks who were in this fire, or are you talking about just in general?
No. I'm talking about the people that were impacted by the fire.
Well, yeah, there's going to be a number of programs that they will qualify for just because they were part, you know, because this is a this incident, right? So, you know, they'll let them know their options. They'll get support, whether they might need to get Section 8, or if they need to, you know, get one of the voucher programs or something like that. So it will be done on a case by case basis. So I'm not really sure, like, you know, one family's need might be different from another. But they will be getting a lot of support. I know the mayor did put up a fund to help with like relief efforts. I know that he got some plane tickets for folks you know, because a lot of the people who perished in the fire were from Africa and Gambia specifically. So they got tickets for folks so that they can come over for the funeral and different things like that. So, oh, okay. Like I said, at all levels of the government, they've been really working together to make sure that these families are taken care of. There's been another number of organizations that's been helping and supported. The Red Cross has been on the scene doing work. The Gambian Youth Center has also been doing a lot of work to make sure the families are taken care of and are okay. So, you know, I believe that it'll be a case-by-case basis on, like, where people will be placed, whether it's a new apartment or whether they go back to their current apartment. I know that they've also even been working with the management of the building because they do have some other units that might be available for families. So it has really been a all-hands-on-deck situation, and those families, I'm sure, will be taken care of.
Okay, thank you. Thank you. So I want to turn it over to the panel members now, before I move any further. Chris?
They collected $240,000 for the families already in donations.
Yes.
Did you hear that? And one of the people, I think it was one of the congressmen, he's introducing a bill that would have an automatic cut up requiring these the makers of these space heaters to have an automatic cutoff switch, which is something that I'm thinking they should have had already. Like, that's crazy that they don't even come with that.
Yeah, that's interesting. I thought they did too. So that's interesting to hear.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it could be some liability, not unless, but I think they were poorly regulated though, these space heaters.
Exactly.
Okay. There were no requirements.
Right. A lot of people don't know about the heaters that shut off automatically in my salon, which I have outdoors. I have a heater that has an automatic shutoff if you set the temperature to a certain temperature, and a lot of people don't even know those exist. They get, you know, like those radiator heaters or those heaters that have, you know, that red flame coming out of it. So, you know, if they don't know what type of heater to purchase,
yeah, sometimes
it becomes
people
a problem.
Buy, you know, they get what they could afford too. That's mm-hmm. part
right.
of the problem.
Right.
You know what
right.
I mean?
Right, right.
So the cheaper
those
ones
automatic
really
shutoffs are expensive.
Don't come with
yeah.
that stuff. Yeah, mm-hmm. they don't come with that.
Yeah, well, you know what? You know what, family? Mm-hmm. I could actually speak intelligently on the space heaters because Concord Village hasn't been setting the world on fire. So last week, when it was like 20 degrees outside, I actually went to a local department store and purchased a space heater for the first time. And the ones that come with timers and stuff, this one cost me $100. When I saw on the news the type of space heaters they were using, those are the cheap ones that they sell at the local grocery stores.
Right, at 99 cent stores.
Mm-hmm. Those are they're very unsafe. Mine, right. You plug it into the wall and the outlet doesn't get hot. There are no sparks. You put a timer on it and it goes on and off. But like I said, mine costs $100 and change. And everybody doesn't have money like that.
Thank you for that.
Unfortunately.
All our listeners, please listen to that. Get the self turn-ons and turn-off ones. Space heaters are much safer.
Well, I'm going to take it even further. We need to make sure that landlords are having homes that are equipped with heat. So that people don't need space heaters, right? Like, you know, people pay their rent and they should be able to have heat. That's like a necessity. So, you know, let's get to a place where we don't need space heaters. You know, incidents happen and things happen. But like that should not be the norm.
That's correct.
Yeah. Does anyone know what those buildings are? Are they gas and electric? I mean, you got a separate heating bill or how's that? Does anyone know?
No, I'm not sure about that.
At Twin Parks? It seemed like it would be a just an electric bill to me. I don't know whether they would split it. Gene, do you know?
It's oil or gas, one of the two.
Yeah, but what would the tenants be paying?
I was going to say a lot of those. Bills? A lot of those big buildings are oil, a lot of them. So I don't know.
So the tenants would be getting two bills then, right? One for electricity and one for heating?
No, a lot of them come, you know, the heat is included in the rent. And if it's oil, the landlord, the owner of the building is responsible for that.
Yeah, that's something that we need to look, you know, get a chance to look into because I don't understand the requirement, the necessity of them using space heaters.
I'm sure that's part of the investigation as well. Why mm-hmm. didn't they have heat? Yes, definitely. they're going to question the landlord and see why these people had to use these space heaters.
Okay. All right. So anyway, Althea, do you want to make any further comments? Do you have anything you want to leave us with in terms of the Twin Parks Northwest Fire? I know go ahead.
I was going to say, I just wanted to just highlight that, in times of tragedy, we always see people come together and especially for this week, it was a very hot topic, but also we should remember that it's going to be a long-term recovery effort for a lot of these families. So let's continue to keep them in our prayers and continue to support them as this process happens. Because, sometimes I think, it's like, it was last week's news, but remember that these are actual people's lives. So it's a long-term effort for us to make sure that this happened. And then, on the government side, I'm just very proud of being part of the Bronx and the Bronx electeds right now, because it just shows how unified we are and how we're really working together on all levels to make sure that this doesn't happen again.
Yes. Thank
you. You know what, Walter?
Yeah.
I got to say that, I've been watching, I've been monitoring, this story very closely, because Fordham Heights is slightly north of the 79th, but the assemblywoman that Councilwoman Stevens mentioned, Udelka Tapia, she's a former district leader. I think she's still a district leader. And once I came on board, she was one of the first to friend me. And everybody responded, from Sunday and saw the destruction. But there's one particular thing that stood out to me that I saw on the news with all these interviews with the survivors. And Althea is right. When we went to school, they taught us fire life safety, how to crawl under the smoke and strop, stop, and roll if you're on fire, things of that nature. And what I noticed is that a majority of the lives lost were immigrants that probably didn't have the proper training. And everybody that was either, I'm not calling anybody out. I'm just telling you what I saw in the news. Everyone that was born and raised in New York, Black and Latino, they all responded in kind. They took towels, they soaked the towels, and they put them under the doors to keep the smoke out. And they didn't open the door and they didn't open the window. And they waited until the fire department knocked on their doors. I saw that on at least four different occasions where women soaked the towels and put it by the door to keep the smoke out. They were trained to do that, whether it was going to school like Althea and I did and being taught in school. But their training in fire life safety saved their family and their household. And those that did not know how to properly respond, their stuff is on fire.
I just want to make sure that we're clearing this up, because one, I don't want to say that, people who didn't get trained or whatever, because we don't know that situation because we were not there. So I think we have to be very careful about that, especially because lives were actually lost. And so it's important not to like have a blame game, right? But I do think that it's important that we are doing fire safety education, and we need to do it at a much different rate, right? Whether, that's in schools, whether that's through like tenant association programs or, whatever, but we need to do that work together because, we weren't there. So we can say that folks were trained in a different way than others, but we don't know that. So I think it's just really important, and we want to make sure that we are not being offensive to those, because lives were lost and we don't know what training that they had. And let's also be clear, like it was an emergency and you're like, let me get out of here as soon as I can. So I think we just want to make sure we're just really careful about how we say some things.
Okay. All right. Now I want to pivot to, and I think that's a segue into my next question for you, is giving non-citizens, they can have green cards, they can be, been here for years and paying taxes and that type of thing, but giving them the right to vote. What is your position on that, Althea?
Well, so I have very strong feelings about this, in the sense of I do believe that we do not do a good job of voter education with current citizens. And now we are going to add an additional 300,000 folks to vote when we can barely get the folks who are already registered to vote in New York City to vote. So I have strong opinions on this, and especially because I am a candidate who just ran her first race ever with ranked choice voting. And it was very difficult, right? The education piece around educating people on ranked choice voting and what that means. And I'll go through it really quickly for anybody who doesn't know or who lives outside of New York City. In this last cycle, and it is only for city elections, and it is only for city elections, and it's only for the general. I mean, it's only for the primaries, so it's not for the general. So instead of you just picking one candidate, you get to rank up to 5 candidates, and you can put 1, 2, 3, or 4. And this was a new way of voting, and the education process really did not happen the way it should have. You know, we got a lot of folks who gave a lot of pushback because they were like, oh, it was COVID and da-da-da-da-da. But people in my community consistently suffers for things like this. And so now, once again, we're going to be going to the voting booths again in another 2 years because of redistricting. And then you're going to have a whole group of people who now have to learn what ranked choice voting is. They also have to know that they can even vote, right? So I think that for me, one of my issues is that we have to get to a place where we're not so quick around being the first, but actually doing things correctly. And what does the implementation look like? I am not a person who believes that we should just do policy because it's cute or a hot thing to do, but because it's going to be done well and it's going to be done right. And that's not what I feel like is happening here. It's a lot of like, we need to be the first. We need to be progressive. And it was like, we just did ranked choice voting and it happened and it did not, the world did not blow up, but it is going to be very difficult, right? But we got through it and now it's like, let's do this again. We needed to get our numbers up in voter turnout. And my district alone, our voter turnout was at like 35%. Like, that's crazy. So that means only 35% of the people in my district decided to vote for me, right? Well, vote in general, right? Because it wasn't just for me, in general. So that means that we have 70% of the population in my district who are disenfranchised and not engaged. And it's not because they're not citizens, it's because we're not doing voter education. So if we are not willing to really sit here and say, let's evaluate and see if things are working before we start adding on, I just think it's a disservice to everyone.
Okay. Now, what is your position? All things being equal, everything in place, execution, everybody's educated. Would you vote for non-citizens to vote?
I mean, absolutely. I think that it makes sense. But like I said, there's some other things in that legislation that was passed that I'm not comfortable with. The fact that people need to be here for 30 days in order to vote, I think that that is crazy. And I also think that there's some constitutional issues because folks can come here and vote and they're here for 30 days. People actually come and vacation in New York for 30 days and then they can go back home and vote in their election and then they don't have to come back here. So I think that there's a lot of loopholes in this legislation that was passed that needs to be looked at. But I do think that people who have green cards and who are here and paying their taxes absolutely should be able to vote. But 30 days to me is just like, what are we trying to do here? And what is this really, what is this legislation really trying to do?
Okay. All right, Gene, could you have any comments on that? What's your position?
Well, you know, to the best of my knowledge, anytime, you know, America comes up with bright ideas, it's never a good thing for Black people. If you look, take a look at Florida. Florida has outnumbered the Democrats. The Republicans have now outnumbered the Democrats in Florida. So the Democrats couldn't win a gubernatorial election, even if every single Democrat in Florida voted, because the Republicans outnumbered them. Also, the fastest growing group in the state of Florida are Latinos.
Correct.
Now, I'm not saying there's a correlation. I'm not saying it's synonymous. I'm just saying it's very interesting when it comes to the numbers. Similarly, in the Bronx, we have a lot of Hispanics and others that are in districts that are led by African Americans or, you know, Black Americans.
Right.
And I just think it's funny, all of a sudden you want to introduce a bill that would give these people voting rights, which will change the tide of who is the elected official. And just to give you an example how that could not work, in Rockland County, there was an assembly district where the assembly member was a black man and he was doing a phenomenal job. But the Haitians overpopulated that particular district and they voted to have a Haitian represent them in the New York State Assembly. And within a year, he had been indicted by the feds and sent to prison for embezzlement. So that's what all of that tribal stuff will get you. So we need to be very careful. Like I said, anytime America gets bright ideas, it's not a good idea for black people. And with that, I'll digress.
Yeah, well, thank you, Gene. I was thinking that's the first thing that came to my mind also was that the dilution of the vote, you know, where we are strong.
I was going to say, are they going to take this to court? Do you guys think that this is going to something that they're going to take to court?
Absolutely. The Republicans have already, they said even before it got passed that they, if it got passed, that they were going to take it to court. Because I will say once again, there are some constitutional issues that's in it because it's how can you consider yourself a citizen and have equal representation when you still register to vote and pretty much a citizen of another country. So the Republicans and the city council have already said that they will be taking it to court.
All right. All right, Chris, you done?
No, I want to ask out there, I want to tell her congratulations on your victory, first and foremost.
Thank you so much.
And I wish you the best. And everybody has a pet peeve, has something that they run on. What's your goals? One of your biggest goals that you want to accomplish?
Chris, we're getting some interference from your side. I don't know why today, but we are getting, you are coming in.
I'm in the basement. I'm not quite clear. Now. I'm sorry.
I don't know. You're going to probably have to go through the roof, man. No, but you got Wi-Fi, so you got to probably stand by your Wi-Fi thing there. But anyway, I'm sorry. I digress. But anyway, go ahead. Althea, you were responding?
Yeah. So, I mean, I guess it's interesting because we didn't start out like me telling about myself. And that would actually give you more of a who I am and what my plans are. But so I was in youth development and advocacy for the last 20 years and making sure they have resources and making sure family has resources. And so for me, running for me was really about how do I make sure that my community is getting everything that we deserve? We are not asking for anything that we shouldn't be getting. We want quality education. We want quality programming. We want all those things because a lot of times it's not that we don't have it. It's that we have not quality stuff. So for me, it's like, how do we make sure that we have quality stuff? So I'm really about working with the nonprofit groups in my community to make sure that they understand what strategic planning is, helping them with budgeting and finance and all those things so that they can provide quality services, you know, working with NYPD to help them build trust within the community again. You know, I have these conversations all the time where they're like, oh, my God, we want to be out here and we want to do all this stuff. And I'm like, you know, having a basketball game with kids is not gaining their trust. We have to figure out what does healing actually look like, because at the end of the day, still people still feel like you're going to kill them. And so if we don't have these real conversations, then that can't happen. And also trying to really bring back communities. One of the things that I really want to see come back and I'm working on with some groups is Black associations. I remember when I was growing up, that was a thing, right? Like the Black associations, they plant the Black parties. They would do bus rides for the kids in the neighborhood. You know, they knew the kids. If there was an issue, we would bring it up at the Black association meeting. And I think that we have to get back to a place where we are a community. Things are so separate and people are so in their bubbles. We are not creating space for people to actually interact and work together.
I agree. That's why our power is eroding. You know, we're eroding.
Am I coming in better?
Yes, much better. Did you change mics or?
And I put my Wi-Fi on. I apologize, guys. And thank you and good luck with your journey. Hopefully you can get a lot accomplished. Neat.
Yeah, I like what I've seen and heard so far. Okay. I want to pivot back. You know, I just want to go back to the vote. All right. You know, President Biden is pushing this Freedom to Vote Act. All right. And, you know, the way it is now with Joe Manchin and this other person from she's from Arizona, two Democratic senators, they're not going to vote for it. But what are your thoughts on this fight that's going on the Freedom to Vote Act that Biden is trying to get through Congress?
I think it's ridiculous that we're still fighting for the freedom to vote in 2022. Like, what are we doing? Like, what is going on? So for me, it's frustrating in that realm of like, why are we still here? Like, and if this does not have people understanding that voting actually does matter because they are still trying to suppress it, it's like, I don't know what else to tell people. Like, you know, people, we've been fighting to vote for a number of years, right? When we think about when founding fathers, at that time, it was only white men, right? White property owners, because it wasn't just white men, it was white property owners, right? And so then you had that, then you know, then we had to fight. And then it was like, okay, we'll let the black people vote. Oh, we'll do this. But like, why are we still talking about voting? And so we have to get to a place where people understand the power of this politics. And like, it's really disheartening to see that in 2022, we're still talking about voting rights. And then also too, we know why we're doing this, right? Because we know this next presidential election is going to be a shit show. It is. And we have to prepare for it. But like, for me, even the thought around like talking about voting rights in 2022, is just like, so we still in the 60s, huh?
Yeah, well, you know, the states are putting into place or passing laws to, well, you know, for lack of a better term, suppress the vote, you know, like mail-in ballots and things of that,
yeah, absolutely,
that nature that have always been there. But all of a sudden, no, we're not doing that anymore. That's going to be against.
Well, not even that anymore. Like, they are like just putting in like the craziest restrictions. I'm surprised they haven't said that you need to pass a literacy test to get your voter's card these days, because that's how far they're going.
They used to do that, you know. Yeah.
I'm surprised they have not introduced that back.
Yeah. Yeah. Anything that they can do, because they know that, you know, the way it stands now, you know, we get a massive turnout, and they know what, in a lot of states, they're going to lose. So that's why they're putting in these things right now as preventive measures.
I want to throw in Ohio, the high court just knocked down the redistricting that the Republicans were trying to do in Ohio. So we need the courts to come out and, you know, help us out in this process. So that's one state where that already happened. Just happened today. The court knocked it down.
Are they going to appeal it?
Because if it goes to the Supreme Court,
it's not a done deal.
Well, so far, we got to take the small victories and see what we can get. I mean,
yeah, I agree with you, Chris. Yeah, I agree with you, man.
But at least the court stood up and said, hey, the Republicans were trying to, you know, put it.
Gerrymander.
Make it a shoe-in. Yeah, gerrymander. Make it a shoe-in, an absolute shoe-in for them to win. So the court knocked it down.
That's the one thing that Republican parties have always been really good at is gerrymandering. Like, right, when you look at some of these states, when you even think of a state like Georgia, right, that we did get to flip back to blue, the reason they've been able to keep that for so long is because they gerrymandered that state and they were able to create the lines so that they could win and continue to hold on to those states. So that is one of the things that they've always been really good at and that the Democrats always have been asleep at the wheel about.
Well, I do have to, in fairness, in all fairness, both parties do gerrymandering. Both. You know that. Right?
No, everyone does. I mean, no, because gerrymandering is illegal. And so I can't say no one's gerrymandering. What I'm saying is that the Republicans actually do it very well, though. No one's
gerrymandering.
It's illegal. It's illegal. Oh, yeah. It should not be gerrymandering.
I know. I agree with you. All right. So, Let's move on to something else I want to talk about. And this is a somewhat New York-centric, even though, you know, we go out international. Yeah, you got anything else that you want to mention on the topic that we were speaking about earlier? On the redrawing of the lines and things of that nature?
No, the last time I spoke with our assembly member, the Honorable Chantel Jackson, she said that they rejected, I think it was like the second offer. So they have to come back with us, to us with something soon, because the petitions come out on March 1st in New York State. So whatever's going to happen needs to happen fast. And that's the latest and the greatest that I've heard. But I would like to turn the attention to our beloved sister, the Honorable Althea Stevens. And let's talk about her and her appointments with the city council and what the first 6 months would look like with the city council with her in place representing the 16th. Like, you were sworn in on January 1st. What will June 1st look like in New York City? Please advise.
Well, I don't know if people know government works very slow. So on June 1st, it will look exactly the same. government don't work that fast. However, you know, right. And a lot of times people don't realize, like, legislation takes years to actually for you to see the ripple effects. But, you know, I hit the ground running and I've been doing the work even before I was elected. Right. That was one of the reasons why I feel like I was able to gain the support, because people saw how hard I worked and they really saw my heart. And so, you know, I've been doing all the things. We're in budget season right now. So right now what we're doing is we're meeting with a lot of the organizations in my community, in my district, to talk about what are the things that need to be funded. You know, that's a big part of the city council, where we are able to really fund different programs. And that's very different than like in the assembly. We have a very big budget. So we'll be meeting with our organizations. I've been doing a lot of school visits to visit my schools to see what the needs are. Everyone knows that my top priority is ensuring that we are giving quality to our kids. So really working with schools and nonprofits to make sure that we are giving them the resources that they need. And one of the things that I'm working on, and Jean, you'll definitely be a part of this as well, is putting together a collective impact group around strategizing. And so this group is going to consist of community leaders, young people, organizations, cure violence groups, and everyone who really wants to see the district move in a different direction. And we're going to come up with a set of goals that we all could agree on and work towards as a collective, right? Like I said, I'm big on collaboration and making sure that we're creating space for people to be in rooms. Because a lot of times we have people doing a whole bunch of stuff all across the city or all across the Bronx or even across my district, and no one's talking to each other, right? So we'll have like one backpack giveaway over here and then another one across the street next week, and they didn't even speak to each other. And it's like, could we have put those resources somewhere else? So that's one of the things that I'm going to be doing in my first 6 months, for us to really bring everybody together, for us to make plans, and we can start moving as a collective instead of in our silos and individually.
Awesome. Thank you for that. Do we have time for an audience question?
Yes, we do.
Yes. So we have Diva with Depression, one of our loyal listeners. She's asking, Ms. Stevens mentioned community events. How will you accomplish that with the crime rate and COVID-19?
Well, that's a two-part question. So I'll start with the COVID. I think that with the community events, we have to just be creative about like how we're interacting, right? I still believe that we still need to be in connection with one another, and people do need to see each other. So one, for example, for Valentine's Day, we're going to be doing a candy and promoting safe sex, and we're going to do a candy and condoms giveaway. So we're going to actually be touring throughout the district and giving out candy and treats and things like that, and promoting safe sex and giving out information to folks throughout the district. That event will be outside. We're also going to be doing a Black History event. It's going to be online, and it'll be through Zoom, but we're going to do an award ceremony to really honor community leaders in our community who's doing the work, and honor them for Black History. So I think it's just about like how are we being creative about those things. And crime is up across the city. And I think that we have to also look at why crime is up across the city. We've been in a pandemic for the last 2 years. When we think about the Bronx a couple of years ago, our unemployment rates were going down dramatically. Our unemployment rate has increased, I think, by like 25% in the last year or two. No, it increased by like 35% in the last year or two, which means there are thousands and thousands of people without jobs. Those things are connected, right? We also have to think about the trauma that people have had for the last 2 years of being in their homes and not understanding what's going on. We always have all this information about COVID, and you can take your mask on, you can take it off, and all these things. And all of those things are reflection, and that's why crime is being affected. So for me, it's thinking about how are we looking at those things, so because those things are correlated. And so I'm never not going to do events or never not do things around because of crime. I think that the more events that we have and the more that we're bringing people together, that also you'll see crime starting to decrease. So I think that those are things that we have to work in tandem with.
Thank you for that.
Okay. Any more audience questions?
Not at the moment.
Okay. But yeah, out there, I want to ask you about the infrastructure bill that passed and the allocation. I know the money's not there yet, but have y'all guys started looking at proposals of things, you know, things that will be done under infrastructure?
Absolutely not, because we're not going to start planning for money that we're not going to get. And so just think about this in this way. So what happens is you're talking about money from the federal government. So this right. has to go through the federal government, then it has to go through the state, and then the state has to allocate it to the city. So that's a lot of tears before it even gets to us, and it hasn't even passed yet. And so,
but that passed, didn't it? That did pass, didn't it? The infrastructure bill, not for the amount that Joe Biden wanted, but I think it went through for like $1.2 trillion.
All right,
that's what I'm talking about.
I must have been under bubble, but it still has to go through the state, right? So that money would go through the state, and then they would allocate it to us. So we still wouldn't see it until it goes through the state.
Okay, gotcha.
We're the city, so we're the last on the totem pole to see that money.
Okay, all right, all right.
So Walter, can we save all of these federal questions for when we have Congressman Torres on for March 4th? And let's keep our questions germane to New York City and New York City alone. And let's keep in mind, our sister has been newly elected and newly installed. So let's keep it New York City. And let's save the federal questions for Richie on March 4th.
Sounds like a plan, Jane. Sounds like a plan. Okay, but I do want to mention, and this is New York-centric, okay? New York City-centric, is the schools being the remote option versus in-school options, on-site options. All right. Now, I see that our mayor, Eric Adams, is in the beginning, he said, okay, it's going to be in-school, on-site, got to go. Now he's like backtracking a little bit because of the surges and things of that nature and the union.
I would say this. I think a little bit too. Like I don't. He didn't say that. And you know, because I was there when the schools opened. Because he actually came to my district the first day of school when we first opened when he got elected. Because remember, the same way I just came in on January 1 is the same time he started as well, right? But. His message to me and what I took from the conversation and from Chancellor Banks, it was never that they didn't want to have a remote option. The messaging to me and what I took from it was that right now, the best thing we need to is to have kids back in school. And for me and what I truly believe is, yes, we should have a remote option, but that should have been worked on for the last 2 years, and it wasn't. And for folks to just be like, we need a remote option right now, will be the same disaster that we had 2 years ago when we found out kids didn't have Wi-Fi in shelters, when kids didn't have devices and all these things. And we are struggling with manpower for teachers right now. So it's not just the easiest to say, like, we'll have remote options and we have teachers to, like, fill those slots. I actually respect that they're like, we need to plan this out so we can do this right and it can be rolled out correctly. Instead of saying like, well, let's go remote right now because this is what we need to do. Because the reality is kids are safe in school. I've worked in schools for the last 20 years of my life. And I know for a fact that kids need to be in school. And especially in communities like mine, where kids sometimes the only meal that they might have is at school. Or one of the things that tormented me the most during the pandemic is I knew for a fact there was kids who didn't get hugs, right? And for me, it's like, how are we doing this correctly? And how are we looking at all the things that kids need to ensure that they are getting quality education? And to just be like, well, we need to go right remote right now, it's to me, and it's also just not fair. He started January 1. How did you expect us to say we're going to do remote right now? Because there was no planning, there was no forethought, any of that. And so, you know, I think that we just have to give people time, because I never heard him say that he was against the remote option. He just kept saying, like, right now we need to be in schools because that's the cards we were dealt. And, like, let's figure out how do we move forward.
Okay. All right, Gene, do you have any comments on that?
No, I do not. I just want to keep hearing the councilwoman talk. I'm learning. Just let her keep talking.
All right. Here we go. Okay. Thank you. All right. But I want to turn it over to the panel, though, because I'm looking at my list. I'm like, y'all guys are moving so quickly. So let me go to Chris. Chris, You have anything, any questions for Althea?
I just want to piggyback the school issue with the kids learning remotely. You know, I got a few friends that are school teachers. They're not big fans of the remote learning because basically a lot of the kids were falling through the cracks, but they also had some, they were a bit nervous about the uptick in the Omicron, whatever it is, because they're saying a lot of these schools, they're not getting the services that they need. They're not being cleaned properly. So I get it. You know, it's a tough situation to be in because you want the kids to learn, but you also want it to be safe because these kids are coming back home to families. They're coming back home to grandmothers sometime, you know, and grandparents who are taking care of them. And those are the people that are most vulnerable and to this COVID-19. So I just wanted to add that in on top of, you know, I don't think it was fair either for the mayor to be faced with that coming into office, you know, right away. Like, how does he make that decision? And de Blasio was working up until the last day. So, you know, he wasn't, you know, given any
leeway to this. Wasn't there a transition team in place?
Yeah.
So there's a transition team, very but vocal. Like to go... No, but not even that. I think like there was a transition team, and I want to be clear. Like I've been working and doing stuff since I won the primary, right? But you don't have the oversight the same way you do once you're an elected. People do things differently. So there was no way for him to be like, let's transition to remote while he was out, because he doesn't have the authority or right to do that at that point, right? Like, you have to respect the channels in which it is, right? And so to say to go to remote, it is not as easy as people make it seem, like, oh, we're going remote tomorrow, right? Like, it's just not the case. Those kids who had that we might have got devices to 2 years ago might not have those devices. So then what happens to those kids, right? Like, you know, I think that it should have always been a remote option, and we should have always been planning for that. But that's not what happened, right? And so this is where we are right now. And I've spoken to both the mayor and the chancellor, and they both are in agreement that there needs to be a remote option. But for them, it is more important for it to be a quality program that we're rolling out than just saying, let's do it to appease the noise that's going on right now. Because here's the other part. People like to talk about the remote option, but they're not talking about the parents who actually say, please don't close schools. Please don't do that again. I need my child to come to school, right? And the other piece is, let's also talk about the social emotional piece that kids actually need to be interacting with other kids. Like, the rates of COVID are not as high for these young kids as it is for older people. So let's also remember that too. But these are crucial years where kids are actually interacting with each other and getting social skills. Like, I'm not really sure why we're at a place where we're saying, like, let's have our kids not interact with other kids anymore when they're not at the highest risk to get the COVID as adults. So I think we have to make sure that we are keeping all these things in perspective, because one of the things that really drives me crazy is because sometimes people are a lot louder, that's the only thing that we hear. But there's a lot of people who are actually going to work every day, doing the things that they need to do, and they want their kids to go to school, but they're not as loud as the people who are saying we need this remote option. And those people there are a lot of parents who do want schools to stay open. And we have to hear them too.
Okay. Absolutely. There's a lot of people that the city wasn't shut down for them. They got to go to work. So where are these kids going to go? You know, who's watching them? That was the other issue. Before, when we were completely shut down, everybody was home together. You don't have that option now. You just want to close a school. That's not going to work.
But I would think that, you know, there was some lessons learned from the time that they were remote.
That part. It should have been lessons learned, but they weren't, right? And that's the thing that I think we have to really be looking at, right? And that's one of the things that I do really like and respect about David Banks, where he is, and that's our new school chancellor, who I'm excited to work with, who he's being very thoughtful about what does this look like and what does the rollout look like and how is this going to impact families. So he's not taking these things lightly, and he's working on putting together a plan so that we can do it and we can do it correctly. And I think that that's the most important thing. And the kids will be fine.
All right. So anyway, I want to, as an end point, know what your top priority, if you had a priority list, which I know you do, what's the top five items or top, give me the top three issues on your priority list.
Well, so the things that I ran on and the things that are most prevalent in my community and my district specifically are food insecurities. We still have a lot of food insecurities in my community. We don't have a lot of restaurants. We don't have a lot of quality supermarkets. People, you know, there's a lot of people who have to travel up to 2 to 3 miles to get a supermarket in some places in my district. So really providing options for people to get quality food, thinking about what does it look like about bringing urban farming to our community, and being creative about those things, right? And also, too, how are we supporting local businesses and how are we getting some of these people who have at-home catering businesses to start opening restaurants and things like that? So food insecurity has always been a main thing. Housing as a human right is another thing that I ran on and I believe is really important. My district is very dense in the sense that we have a lot of buildings. It's very dense. And so for me, it's really thinking about how are we ensuring that people from our community are getting housing, right? Because we have a lot of shelters, but how are we moving from a city that is a shelter city to a city that is providing affordable, clean housing for people, right? The average income in my district is $26,000. And so for me, if you're telling me that you're only building housing for the median income of $40,000, that means you're not building for my people. And where do you want them to go? So really being able to advocate to ensure that we have equality amongst housing and we're advocating for housing as a human right and not putting people in shelters. The city is much more comfortable paying for people to be in shelters and paying up to $350 per night for a family to stay in a shelter or a hotel, but is not willing to invest that same money in a voucher for them to stay in their homes. So we really have to switch this mentality around what we consider as housing in New York City. And then just the last thing, I'm a youth developer. So how are we supporting our young people? What does that really look like? How are we ensuring that when they go to high school, that they have options, right? And thinking about what are their vocational options? What are their college options? Like, what is it that they want to do and how are we supporting them and really building up the next generation? That often, you know, a lot of people talk about it, but you don't really see that actualizing, right? So how are we getting vocational programs in our school? How are we getting kids into unions who might not want to go straight to college? What does it look like to get college access to our kids and provide them with the resources that they need so they can become productive citizens in our society?
All right. Great. Great. All right. I'm going to ask the panel, Michelle first. Do we have any questions from the audience? Well,
Thea? No more questions from the audience at all. I did have a question, but she just answered it.
Oh, okay. Okay. All right. Chris, you have any questions for Althea? Because we're going to be getting to that point.
No, she pretty much hit it all out the park there just now. And I just want to wish her luck. Yes. Not luck. You know, I know she's going to do great. Best. She sounds like she's good people. Go out there and do the best you can for your people. And, you know, I always consider, you know, people who advocate for poor and underserved communities, y'all first responders too. You're out there doing that work and it's not easy. So keep your head up and push through. Good luck.
I appreciate that. Good luck.
All right.
Yes.
Yeah, definitely. Jane?
Yeah. For those that don't know, our former city council member, for District 16, Vanessa Gibson, who is also a friend to the show, in that she's been on this show twice. She's now currently the new Bronx Borough President. She has succeeded the Honorable Ruben Diaz Jr., who held office faithfully and fervently for 12 years. And now Althea has stepped in to fill some big shoes. And yes. I just want to say publicly on this platform, as your male district leader and as your brother, the same way I supported Vanessa wholeheartedly in the city council, I want you to know that I'm going to support you in the same manner. And we're going to do great things within this district. And I can't wait for what the future holds. And I'm glad you're our city council member. And I'll save the rest of the time for Althea, because that's why she's on the show.
Awesome. Thank you.
All right.
Well, thank you, Jay.
Yeah, come back anytime.
Yeah, I would just like to say, but let me just say, just in case I omitted it earlier, I think I did, is that I want to first congratulate out there. And I wish, I'm wishing you the best. I think that we got the best man at the plate, you know, because there are a lot of issues that are confronting us. We live in a very, very strange time. It's like a science fiction movie. So I think we got you sound like you got the game. We want to have you back so you can give us some, not, I wouldn't say progress reports, but if you have the time, our door is open and our forum is open for you, you know, to come back. So we look forward to you coming back. All right.
Absolutely. So invite me and I'll be there. I'll try to make the time. So.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much.
Gene knows where to find me.
All right. And
we're
also
want to thank you, Gene.
Awesome.
So Althea, can you shout out verbally? I've been putting it in the chat room where people can find you.
Oh, absolutely. And I did see that. So I do appreciate that.
Yes.
So folks, I am super accessible and I tell people this all the time. When you hit me up on social media, it's actually me responding because I get that all the time. Like, wait, is this Althea? And I'm like, yes, it's me. People still get very, very shocked by that. But you can follow me on Instagram at @A_Stevens, Stevens, D16. That is A as in apple, _Stevens, D16. And that is both on Instagram and Twitter.
Awesome.
Okay. All right. Okay. Awesome. Okay. So I'm going to turn it over to Michelle, but I do want to remind everyone that, you know, there will be a rebroadcast of this live show on Sunday as usual. On the Apple Podcasts and Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast, you know, you can bring up the show, and it'll be out after 3 p.m. on Sunday. And I'm gonna turn it over to Michelle. But again, Althea, thank you and good luck. You got a lot of work ahead of you.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Walter, the host of the Walt Weekly, and thank you to our guest, Althea Stevens, out of the Bronx, New York. District 16. Thank you to our amazing panel members, Gene Edwards and Christopher Sweeney, and of course, our live audience. Thank you for joining our weekly Friday Live. We hope you all enjoyed this broadcast from New York City. The show will be rebroadcast this Sunday at 3 p.m. on all streaming platforms. Please join us next week for our next Friday Night Live. You can follow us at www.thewaltweekly.com, IG and Facebook, The Walt Weekly, Twitter, Walt Weekly, Podbean, The Walt Weekly, and all streaming platforms. Have an awesome weekend. Thank you for joining us.
Yeah, good Michelle, night. One thing. Yes. One thing before you go. Michelle, yes. Michelle.
Yes,
I'm
sir.
Trying to act like Gene. Okay. So we do have a big gun coming in a couple of weeks. Who is that, by the way, that you got coming in?
Yes, Gene, announce it.
All right, Richie Torres.
Oh, he left. Richie Torres.
Richie Torres. Yeah, I got.
Yes.
Yes. He's coming in. Yes. So I want to alert everybody that Richie Torres will be coming in. You will be notified. And please follow. That way you get that early notification.
Yes. And make sure you tune in for February for Black History Month and March. We're going to have a lot of nice shows for Women's History Month as well. So we hope to get you back then as well, Althea. So thank you all for joining.
All right. Have a good weekend.
Great. Good night.